It was fascinating. And thank you, Jeremy, for arranging and the whole concept. And thank you for coming. I just want to share with you a few thoughts. I prepared a few thoughts, and as you were talking, I also had a few more thoughts. I once heard a speech from Rabbi Nathan Lopez Cardoza, who lives in Yerushalayim right now. It's an interesting fellow. He has his own path a little bit. He goes his own way. He doesn't fit in the standard Haredi world. He spoke in Cleveland, I'm going to say over 30 years ago. And the topic which he spoke about was this tension between two mitzvahs. The first mitzvah is the mitzvah of Kipshua. The Rosh tells Adam Rishon that he should overtake the world. He should be coverage the world. He should take advantage of the resources which the world has, use them, develop them. Mankind is going to take out of the world whatever they want. That's the one side. And he spoke, his speech was about that topic. The problem which he then dealt with is that man starts thinking too highly of himself, and the solution which he had was the concept of Shabbos. That was his approach. Now, to deal with that problem, and I'll just touch on that for just a moment because I don't want to leave you hanging on that. He said, he asked the question, is why did Hashem create sleep? And we'd be so much easier if we wouldn't have to sleep. The Russia could have made our bodies that we wouldn't have to sleep. You'd gain so much time in your day. I would gain 4 hours in my day. You would gain 6 hours in your day. Some people would gain 8 hours in their day, right? Depending on, sometimes 3 hours in my day, whatever it would be, right? So we so much easier without sleep. So the Medrash asked the question. And the Medrash says that Adam Rishon was created with such holiness that when the Malachim saw Adam, they thought he was God. And then to the point that they were ready to say Kadosh, Kadosh, Kadosh in front of Adam Rishon, the Medrash says. And the Rosh Hashem came and put Adam to sleep. They saw he fell asleep, but really he wasn't God. So every man thinks, I'm God. I run the world. He goes to bed, he wakes up in the morning, and the world is still there. He realizes he's not God. That's how he put it. So Shabbos is a wakeful sleep. Shabbos is 24 hours, 26 hours a day, a week. You step out of the world, you come back to the world, and the world is still there. And you realize that you're not the one in charge. That was his, together with Kipshua, you need that. Rav Hirsch actually says it a little bit differently. Rav Hirsch, in the beginning, in Chorev, divides the mitzvahs into six categories. One of the categories he calls Toros, which he really translates to mean is giving everything in the world its just due. And he starts off with what he sees as the primary mitzvah, which describes this concept. And he picks a mitzvah which you would not have chosen. And remember when I read it the first time, I said, wow. And the mitzvah is Baltashkes. And he bases himself on a Gemara in Shabbos. The Gemara in Shabbos says that the more it goes through this thought process, that the Yetzirah comes to the person and tells him, rip clothing. The person is Kareh Begad Bechamos. He gets angry and he rips clothing. The Gemara says he's on his way to doing Avodah Zorah. It should be the equivalent of Avodah Zorah, the Gemara says. The Gemara says, why Avodah Zorah? He just rips some clothing in his anger. So the Gemara says, well, that's how the Yetzirah works. The Yetzirah starts with something small, something bigger. Next thing you know, he says Avodah Zorah, and the person does Avodah Zorah. So the question is, that's true, but why did you start with tearing clothing? You could have, if the thought process picked any little thing, and so I speak Lashon Hara, I'm doing Avodah Zorah, because Lashon Hara, next thing you know, it's Avodah Zorah. Like, why specifically tearing clothing in anger? He says, the truth is, you have to realize that if I borrow a garment from somebody, I can use any usage I want of it because I borrowed it, but I cannot destroy it, because that belongs to the owner. Only the owner has the right to destroy it. And when you tear clothing in your anger, what you're saying is you're the owner and not the borrower from Hashem. And there's nobody who's not close to the, as close, there's nobody more close to the concern of Avodah Zorah, the person who thinks he owns the world. Because the whole idea is that we recognize Hashem owns the world. And then, from that vantage point, we're not going to stray into other fields. But if I think I'm the boss, I'm the Avodah Zorah in a certain sense. So Baltashkes, he sees, is this message. Baltashkes is Hashem owns the world. It's his world, and we have to treat it with tremendous respect. So we have this mitzvah of Kipshua on one side, which is to take all the resources, pull everything out of the world, find all of everything that there is on one side. On the other side, we have this idea that it's not ours. We have to treat it with tremendous respect and recognize that it's Hashem's, and we can't do anything that we want. So one of the examples of this is, what was mentioned by Dr. Weinstock was this issue of you're starting a treatment and it might kill somebody. Right? They recognize that there is potential toxicities which are dangerous. And this is a halachic issue which we grapple with. How do you balance dangerous therapies? When yes, when no, etc. So I'm not going to get involved in the full halachic treatment of that, because that deserves a longer speech than the time allotted. But there's a Gemara which touches on this, just to give you the Gemara at least. The Gemara is actually was the Haftarah of Parshas Tetzaveh Matzorah. The Gemara talks about that there is these four Matzoraim who are sitting outside of the city. They're in this tremendous situation of starvation, and they're being besieged by the Aram. And they said, you know what, forget it. Why are we sitting here by the gate to die? You might as well go to the camp of Aram, and they might kill us, and they might give us food. So the Gemara says that was a halachically correct decision, because they're going to die anyway. And therefore, to put themselves into danger by going into the camp, potentially being killed by Aram, or potentially being saved, was a valid halachic decision. And that's the source for this discussion of when we have a right to say we'll do something dangerous, when we not. It all starts from this story of these four Mitzrayim, which you think is just a nice story in Tanakh, and that becomes Gemara and Avodah Zarah in the second parak, and that becomes the source of all of this halachic discussion. When is it, what type of risk is acceptable, what is not acceptable? But really, the root of the ideas are. We don't own our bodies. We can't decide whatever we want. They belong to Hashem. So we have this right to try and do as best as we can on one side, and we have recognized that we can't just throw away our lives. You know what? I'm not in the mood. I'd rather die. You know, that's not an option which we own. That we have. So we have this tension. We have this balance. One last point which I want to touch on, which really maybe takes us into another area, is, so how do you balance this Kipshua and this Baltashkis? And I think you balance it with humility, recognizing that we don't know what the consequences of what we're going to be doing. So yes, keep shua. Yes, but you know, you never know what is going to happen. There's always that new reaction which might be positive. Unintended consequences positively or negatively. Fascinating, you mentioned the malaria case in World War II. That's a famous story in the country of Borneo, which the Australia was doing the main fighting over there, and they had a problem with malaria, which many of the locals did not have. They developed an immunity to malaria, so malaria wasn't the problem for them, but they had a problem with malaria, and they used some type of chemical agent to get rid of the malaria. Well, what it did also was that it apparently killed the cats, and there was an overrunning of a increase of the rat population because it killed the cats. Now, some elements of the story seem to be debated what exactly happened. You know, you can Google it and you'll find, you know, yes, it did happen. No, it didn't happen. Some of it happened. Didn't happen. You know, all of the, nowadays, I don't believe anything within it anymore. I cannot figure out what's real and what's not real anymore. But the story is a known story of unintended consequences. And of course, this became like one of these famous stories. The final end of the story was that the rats increased and they had that brought disease. And actually, the natives who lived in grass houses. Some lost their houses because the rats ate the houses. So they're left homeless with illness because of this great idea of putting DDT or whatever it was to get rid of the malaria. So humility. We don't know what the result is going to be. We approach it cautiously. And this applies in the world of halacha also. I'll just tell you a fascinating story, which I can't say I would have decided, and I'm happy I wasn't the one who had to decide. And there's going to be a disagreement where you draw the line, which that's part of the challenge of halacha or hashkafa. In Poland, between the two wars, the country felt that they needed to increase their education. They made a compulsory education law for all children, and school was 6 days a week, including Shabbos. So any child who was not in the cheder system, which was quote unquote being illegal anyway, which they left them alone because they figured was going to school 6 days a week, and there was thousands of Jewish children going to school on Shabbos and writing on Shabbos and doing Chilul Shabbos. So somebody suggested they would create this, the first day school, that we should create a day school which we're going to have secular studies being done under the auspices of Torah, and we will get the 6 days by having it on Sunday or making up for it, etc. And this is brought to the Gedolim, and the Belzer Rebbe said no. Tinkering with the system which we know works, even if it means leaving many people in the Chalal Shabbos, we don't know what the consequences are the other direction. And we cannot take the responsibility to make that decision. It was a fascinating approach. That humility that he had, we're talking about the Belzer, was a great hadr, he was a tremendous Talmud Chacham, says, I don't know the consequences, and I can't take that chance. So we grapple with this issue to try to find the balance. I just had this conversation with somebody this Shabbos, actually. Individual comes to me, and he's grappling with why aren't the rabbis more innovative? Why aren't the rabbis, you know, more creative in solutions, etc.? And why don't we do more? And I said, you know, and of course he was comparing it to individual X, who does do that. And that's the problem with orthodoxy, as he put it, as opposed to something else. So I said, you know, it's a good point. I can't answer for anybody else, but humility is part of the question. Do I really know how this solution, it might help you, and I can be confident it could help you, but it might hurt 10 people down the road. So we do testing until the government, and people complain about our government that we don't allow drugs right away. And that there's a lot of testing before a government, they're going to allow a drug out there. And other countries aren't so such government control. And I think in this area specifically, I have to tell you, my feeling is government control is a good thing. Not that I'm a big fan of government control in every area, but in this area specifically, I think that the humility which comes with that is a tremendously valuable understanding of what the limitations of the human mind. I think that's a tremendous thing that we do have that recognized in our country. So that's some thoughts I wanted to share with you. And at this point in time,